Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Chill Podcast with Rex and Lav. If you're watching along on YouTube, welcome. Rex and I have gone to at least like the 2010s. We now have a splitter. We each have microphones. We're not going to have to share the mic. It's not going to be awkward. We have this visual of us both in the same shot. So major championships in 2026, any big event in 2026, the Players' Championship, the President's Cup, this is going to be the setup. It's going to be great. Our audio should be better. We're here, Rex, for the Constellation Furyk and Friends. We just played in the media day. More on that in a moment because it certainly was ugly. But we have a good show for you today. A special guest, Michael Brennan, latest winner on the PGA Tour. Very excited to get to that one.
This is amazing that we were able to pull this off. That everyone knows you've been with us every step of the way. You've talked us through the bad audio. You've talked us through the idea that maybe it's better if we're actually in the same shot instead of doing the two shot. Maybe it's better interaction. You talked us through the remote mics that did not work at the Ryder Cup. You talked us through Lav not being able to share a mic, which we should have probably foreseen that coming. And here we are. Finally, 2025. Look at us. What's next?
Who knows? The sky is the limit once we can cross this one off the list. Let's get to that Michael Brennan interview. Interviewed him last week, a couple days removed from his victory at the Bank of Utah Championship. A pretty incredible story. If you have not been following along in the fall, here's a player who absolutely got red hot this year on the PGA Tour America as a developmental circuit, had access and status on the Korn Ferry Tour for 2026. Does not need it on a sponsor exemption in Utah, wins the golf tournament. His life has changed. His career has changed. A really interesting and thoughtful interview, about 25 minutes. Let's roll that in now. And we're pleased to be joined now by Michael Brennan, the newest winner on the PGA Tour. Is at his home. Michael, really appreciate you taking the time. What have the last couple of days been like for you since you won the PGA Tour?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. A lot of answering texts, messages on Instagram. I would say that's probably been, a majority of the time since then. A few interviews, but that's about it so far.
How many texts did you have once you flipped open your phone after winning on Sunday in Utah?
When I first opened my phone, it was after I did like media and all that sort of stuff, and I had like 1,000 texts, which... Yeah, so I mean, in total, with Instagram and stuff, we're probably closer to 1,500 plus. But had 1,000, and a lot of them were from a group chat of just like my buddies, but wasn't 1,000 individual people, but a lot of text to sift through.
What's the overwhelming sentiment from your buddies, from your close friends? You know, you're a player who is grinding on the PGA Tour Americas. Had a really hot stretch, earned Korn Ferry Tour status, and then in your first PGA Tour start as a professional, you go out and win. So from your buddies, the guys you hang out with and talk to the most, like what's been their general reception to it?
Yeah, I think that they're in a bit of a disbelief as well. You know, just kind of can't believe it happened so fast. I went out to dinner with a bunch of them last night, and we just went to a local burger place in our town and just kind of sat and talked for a while, and it was good to catch up and see them. They were just so excited for me. They were guys I grew up playing golf with, and so, you know, I feel like they kind of have an even closer relationship to the victory because it's something that we grew up doing, and you know, we've been playing together for so long, and they were just very excited, which was cool.
Michael, as you reflect on Utah, what memory of that week do you think will be the most enduring for you?
Man, there's a lot of good stuff, you know, to take away from that week. I don't know. It'd be hard to forget about like the time on 18 green, you know, after the win. That'll be a tough memory to forget about. One I hope I never do, but it was just great having my parents out there. That was they weren't able to be at any of my three PGA Tour Americas wins, or, you know, they just didn't go to those tournaments. So they weren't able to see one of those three victories. And then the one tour event I go to, you know, they are able to see a win. So that was really cool. First professional win with them being there, you know, it was really neat to be able to share that with my parents.
You won on a sponsor exemption, and we hear a lot about them. They tend to be somewhat at least controversial, at least in our circles, and like the signature events and the players who are getting them in. Can you take us behind the scenes? Like, what's actually the process for asking for and receiving a sponsor exemption? And did it involve anything last week with the sponsors and the tournament once you're actually there?
Yeah. So after I'd won three times on the Americas Tour, I felt like I'd been playing really good. My world ranking had been improving, and I thought that I was going to get into a lot of the fall events, and I thought it was going to be far easier than it ended up being. And that was not the case. Honestly, after a couple weeks of, you know, kind of nothing, hearing nothing super positive from the tournament directors or from my agent, I kind of lost a bit of hope, and I didn't think I was going to be playing in any of the fall events, honestly. And I'm very fortunate. I have a great team that helping me out, you know, with all that sort of stuff. My agent, Terry Riley from Wasserman, does, so like he did a lot of the reaching out and on my behalf. And I didn't get told that I was in the field until Friday before, like the week before. So I got told on Friday and I left on Sunday. So it was pretty quick turnaround from being told I got a spot in the field to flying out to Vegas and then driving to Utah, which is crazy. But it's just so last minute, and I didn't think I was going to be playing in any of the fall events. So
I want to,
so yeah, I mean, it's crazy process. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to get back to that in a second, because I think that's a important point to make about the pathways and the opportunities. But I think one of the most interesting parts about your journey is, as a three-time winner on the PGA Tour Americas, you were then exempt on the Korn Ferry Tour for 2026. By virtue of your win now, you completely bypass the Korn Ferry Tour in 2026 because you were fully exempt on tour through 2027. I'm curious, from like a logistical standpoint, like how much planning had you started to do for your Korn Ferry Tour season? Had you started to map out a schedule? Were you booking VRBOs? Were you getting rental cars? What was sort of your process for the KFT looking ahead?
Yeah, I hadn't booked anything for the actual season because they don't even release the schedule until November 1st. So that the official dates and times haven't been released. So I couldn't book exact weeks or flights or anything like that. But I had booked a house in Jacksonville. My parents were going to come down for the tour champion or for the final stage of Q school, sorry, in mid-December. And I knew those dates. So I had all that booked, had to cancel that. It was great cancellation. And but those were really kind of only immediate plans that I had booked for the year, which is final stage of Q school. So I was going to play in a pro member in mid-November that I had to cancel, because I'm going to be in Bermuda now, which is great. You know, I feel bad for canceling, but Bermuda is going to be pretty sweet too.
Yeah, these are all very good problems to have as a new full member on the PGA Tour. Really curious, if your friends ask you, you know, what's life like on the mini tours, on the PGA Tour Americas in your case, how do you describe what that culture, what that atmosphere, what those tournaments are like?
I think they're amazing. I had a ton of fun playing on the Americas Tour the last year and a half. And I think there's definitely a little bit more of there's more camaraderie. I mean, not that I have a ton of experience on tour, but I'd imagine there's more camaraderie because everyone's in a pretty similar situation. Most of them are fresh or within a few years of graduating from college. So a lot of guys in their 20s and early 30s, typically a younger crowd, haven't made millions of dollars yet playing professional golf. You know, it's a bit more of a grind being out there. The amenities aren't quite as nice, but it's still great competition. It's fun to be around with everyone because everyone's doing the same thing every week. You see the same guys, you build great friendships, you travel, you eat dinner together, play practice rounds together. And so like that, all that camaraderie is really, really cool. And I'm glad that I was able to kind of be a part of that for a while.
Michael, how do you avoid what I would imagine would be a very human natural temptation to always be looking ahead to something that's bigger and better, to be comparing yourself to others who perhaps launched their careers even quicker than you did. And you look at them and say, I've been beating you. Why aren't I where I think I should be? How do you avoid that at that sort of stage of your career when you're grinding as you were on the PGA Tour Americas?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you just need to understand, like everyone's got their own timeline. You know, I to an extent can control what happens to me, but I mean, God has the ultimate authority and control of my life. And so I just try to do what I can do. You know, I understand that I can practice, I can work hard, I can prepare as best I think I can prepare, you know, and maybe it's not the perfect way to do it, but I also think you can kind of get bogged down in trying to be super optimal and not just, you know, getting it done in a sense. But you just got to understand that, look, I enjoyed playing professional golf on the America's Tour. I thought it was it's fun. You know, this is what I want to do. This has been my dream to play professional golf. And it has been my dream to play on the PGA Tour, not on the America's Tour, but that's just a step in the right direction. And it's, you know, all part of the process of playing golf.
Speaking of which, how do you think that experience, and you had roughly a year and a half on that circuit, how do you think it'll be beneficial, that experience, now as you embark on a full-fledged PGA Tour career?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, the difference between college golf and professional golf, I felt like, is quite big, and not so much level of skill. I mean, you're even seeing now, like, there are some college players who, Luke Clanton, Gordon Sargeant, David Ford, Jackson Koivins, you know, that have full PGA Tour cards straight out of college. Thor Bjornsson was number one on the PGA Tour U in my year. Like, they're just going straight to the tour and competing and playing well. And so I don't know if it's really there is a competition jump, but it's mostly planning out a week, playing in a 4-day event, learning how to prepare Monday through Wednesday for a tournament. Like, are you going to go? When are you going to work out? How much are you going to play? How much are you going to practice? Like, what does a practice routine look like for you? In college, everything's very condensed. Your coach has a large say on what you're going to do and what you're not going to do and stuff like that. So figuring all that out for your own was very beneficial to do that on the America's Tour, because I felt like I could kind of experiment maybe a little bit, learn what I thought worked for me, what didn't work for me. And so last week when I got to the tour event, I mean, that was my first PGA Tour event in over 2 years, first one as a pro. But even though I hadn't played in one, I felt like I was prepared for the week, because I just did everything that I had been doing on the America's Tour. And at least last week it you know, worked. And but I try to stick to the same practice round schedule, same practice schedule, you know, just do everything as similar to that as I could. And so when I look back at it, like, I just know for a fact that those experiences and those memories on the America's Tour were so helpful in my development.
So it sounds like you were discovering that sort of trial and error, trying to being your own man, as opposed to, you know, picking the brains of any veterans, you know, on the PGA Tour you might know, or any friends you had who've already been logging starts in the PGA Tour Americas. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of that as well. I have good relationships with some of the past wake players who are now playing in the PGA Tour, Cam and Will and Webb, you know, some of the more recent guys. And I'd ask them, you know, and about what to do, what goes on. And they definitely helped guide me a little bit, you know, but a lot of it, my caddy Jeff and I, is a friend of mine from school, and it was his first time really caddying, was last summer on the America's Tour. So we were kind of figuring it out together. And I think that was pretty fun that we were able to learn together, and we're still in the process of, you know, refining our strategy and getting better at, you know, being a player with a caddy, because that's also something different, you know, is you're not doing everything by yourself and trying to let the caddy take some of the weight off your shoulders, in a sense, you know, whether that just be helping you practice Monday through Wednesday, helping you plan for a course, that sort of thing. And Jeff's gotten way better as we've been working together for about a year and a half now. And, you know, our teamwork and communication has just continued to improve. So definitely a lot of trial and error between the two of us.
You make a great point about the jump from college and amateur golf to the pros not being so much about talent, because we do have an abundance of evidence now that players like yourself are ready to compete right away once they hit the PGA Tour and circuits like it. What do you attribute that to? You know, why are we seeing so many players between the ages of 19 to 23 when they're getting their first couple cracks at the PGA Tour able to make a splash right away?
Good question. I don't know for a fact. I would say this is pure speculation, you know, what I think, but I think that I think everyone knows everything, and maybe not everything, that's definitely an exaggeration, but for a college player, it's way easier to get coaching from high level coaches, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you see everything on social media, you see what the pros do, you see like everything's so much more exposed that I think the training and the practice for these younger players is just getting better at an earlier age. So they have maybe a couple years of, you know, really high level practice and training before turning pro. Whereas maybe before, you know, the elite coaches who are traveling the tour, they're not getting around to junior golfers or college golfers, maybe quite as much. That would be my guess. Again, I have no real reason to think that, but I feel like that probably plays into it a little bit.
Did you have any stage fright, any awe factor when you were playing in Utah? Or to your point, have you sort of been conditioned to this is what a PGA Tour lifestyle is like? I'm ready for it. I know what to expect, and I'm off and running.
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of a, you know, an awe. Jason Day registered right behind me on Monday, you know, and like, that's pretty cool. I'm not playing with Jason Day all the time. You know, it's great. Now I'm going to be playing in tournaments with him much more frequently, but I had played in the US Open and played in the Genesis in 22, and I was an alternate at the US Open at Torrey in 21. So I feel like those experiences, like just kind of being around the guys, I was definitely more in awe in those weeks than I was last week, because I had more experience under my belt. I felt like my game was better just from playing on the America's Tour. So I did definitely feel a little bit more prepared to play last week, you know, and compete and not just be happy to be there. Also, as I've gotten older, I have more friends who are playing on tour, you know, guys I played junior golf with and college golf with. And I think that definitely takes away a little bit of the awe factor, you know, of, because you see that they're able to compete and play well and finish, you know, high on leaderboards and stuff like that and win golf tournaments. So, and it's like, you know, I played with them in college golf and yeah, you know, it's just more familiarity, I guess, with that level of play.
Michael, one of the things that really stood out about your win in Utah was your power, your speed, your distance, your beautifully technically sound swing. You know, everyone talks about your power game, and I think it's really easy for us on the outside to throw players like yourself and those who are similar just sort of in the same bucket, right? Like these guys are a product of the modern game, with optimized swings and trying to launch it high and play it, not necessarily a bomb and gouge style game, but a really aggressive pro driver style of play. Michael Thorbjornsson, Luke Clanton, like you mentioned. Is that insulting to you that you could be pinned as just like a really great driver of the golf ball? Like, do you think that actually reduces the talent and the skill that is required to, yes, hit it 350 yards as your measured driving distance was in Utah, but also missed just six fairways as you did in Utah? How do you sort of view the distance boom in the game and where your place among it is?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not upset seeing that people are impressed by the distance, you know, like I won't lie when I go on social media and like the tour made a post about like Michael Brennan's drives progressively getting longer. And like, it was a cool video, you know, like it was, yeah. I was like, oh, like that's sweet. But yeah, I mean, to play professional golf, there is certainly much more that is needed than hitting the ball far. But I really don't care that much about, you know, what someone on Instagram is going to say. Like, it's not,
but have you,
just because they say I'm a good driver, like, doesn't mean they're making my putting worse. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Have you taken it upon yourself, though, over the last, you know, 2 years to refine other parts of your game that allow you to really capitalize and take advantage of what is is clearly an advantageous spot for you off the tee?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And so, like, I know my driving is a strength of mine, and I try to lean into that because I feel like it is, you know, it is a strength. I'm able to hit it. I have some speed and pretty good control with the driver. And so last year, our focus with my coach and just looking after the stats and stuff was to try to minimize bogey avoidance and how we can be more proficient on and around the greens, you know, better putting inside of 10 feet, better chipping. And I feel like that showed this year. I've my bogey avoidance stats have been much better on the America's Tour. Last week, my scrambling percentage was pretty high. And so, like, seeing that stuff improve has been probably more meaningful for me and, you know, my team than seeing the driving stats. Whereas everyone else may be impressed by the driving stats, but that's kind of, you know, been there for a couple of years for me. But seeing everything else improve around it has been great to see.
Yeah, certainly when you win by 4 shots in the PGA Tour, you can't just rely on one aspect, and you certainly did not do that in Utah. You mentioned, Michael, the sort of surprise or even frustration that you thought you were going to be getting into fall events and you didn't. Rex and I talked a lot about this on last week's show with the pathways and the opportunities. Do you feel like players like yourselves are given enough opportunities to prove themselves at the elite level and change their career trajectories?
Yeah, tough question. I think I was given a great opportunity to be playing out on a tour, any tour out of college, you know. I would have loved to have, for it to have been the Korn Ferry Tour. I was 9th in the PGA Tour U rankings going into the national championship, and I ended up finishing 12th. I kind of had a so-so week, and a couple guys right behind me played well and jumped me. And so that was definitely disappointing. But at the end of it, you know, I enjoyed playing on the America's Tour. I got, if you were to even take out this win last week, I got promoted to the Korn Ferry Tour, and that was my goal for the year, was to get a Korn Ferry Tour card. Just, I was like, all right, I'm playing on the America's Tour. That's great. It's going to be a great learning experience for me. You know, let's take advantage of it and try to get a Korn Ferry Tour card. And, you know, I was very thankful to be able to do that, and gave me great opportunity, you know, for next year to have had a Korn Ferry Tour card. And I mean, getting into the tournament last week was great. You know, that was a bonus. And winning is, I don't know, it's just kind of still a little crazy to me because that was just not on, you know, not on my bingo card for the 2025 season. But here we are.
If you think about it, how are you viewing sort of like the evolving landscape of the PGA Tour? Because those of us on the outside, it seems like the walls are closing in a little bit, right? Like, they went from 125 to 100 fully exempt members. You look at the Korn Ferry Tour, they went from 25 guys getting their cards down to 20. Even Q School, it was the top 5 in ties. Now it's just top 5. They got rid of the guys who potentially could be tying for 5th. It seems like they're trying to really make a PGA Tour card matter, while also sort of conversely making it a little bit harder for guys to crack the PGA Tour. How are you viewing it when you're trying to climb the rungs of the professional ladder?
Yeah, I know some guys, you know, maybe get a little frustrated by it. I don't know. I don't hate it. I mean, now that I've won and I'm on tour for a couple of years, you know, I'm super glad that I was able to crack into that. And Now the next step is getting into the elevated events, because that's another, it's kind of the tours. I have tour membership, but I'm not in all the events, so it's a weird, maybe a little kind of a, two-tier system. But I totally understand having a tour card meaning more. Like, for example, I played with Pearson Cootie on Thursday and Friday this past week in Utah, and he played amazing on the Korn Ferry Tour, but he had conditional PGA Tour status. And I think he said he was playing in his like 32nd or 33rd event in Utah, which is like that's a lot. And I mean, good for him for grinding it out like that. But it's definitely kind of a tough spot to be, I'd imagine, to be in limbo in a sense between the a two tour system. And so it would be nice to know if you have a PGA Tour card, you're going to get into all of the regular events. And so that for that reason I understand, but I don't know, it's a tough thing to try to manage. It's not an easy job, I'm sure, to try to figure out the spots and the exemptions and who gets in where, and it's not my job, so I'm glad I don't have to try to figure it out.
Absolutely. It's the job for the highly paid PGA Tour executives. I know right now, Michael, you're on cloud nine. You want to enjoy this. You're also in a PGA Tour event this week. What are sort of your priorities now as you look towards the rest of the fall, whether it's the trying to get into the top 50 in the world ranking by the end of the year, gets you in the Masters, trying to lock up, as you mentioned, even a couple more signature events, locking down sponsor exemptions in those signature events. How do you sort of map out your priorities for the remaining 2 months of 2025?
I got three tournaments to play in, and I'm just going to try to play as well as I can. I don't really, it's been so recent, it's hard for me to set a goal, kind of in a sense, for the rest of the year. Just try to go to each event with a similar mentality and run my process Monday through Wednesday, and just compete as best I can on Thursday and see what happens. I mean, yeah, it would be great to finish the year at top 50. It's been a, a goal to play in the Masters and to win the Masters. That's someday. That's been a, a childhood dream of mine. So to be close and have an opportunity to do that is really cool. A lot closer now than I thought I would have been a few weeks ago. So, that's all great, and just compete as best I can these last 3 weeks and see what happens.
And to get you out of here on this one, as you look ahead to 2026, any tournaments, any golf courses, you're dying to go play, any players besides Jason Day, who you got to run into in Utah, that you really want to meet up with and play?
I would love to play at Riviera in the Genesis. That's I qualified into that tournament in 2022 through the Genesis Collegiate Showcase. That was my first PGA Tour event that I played in. I think the golf course is my favorite in the world. And I think I have an opportunity to do that through the like fall series, Aeon Swing something. I like, see, I don't even know exactly what the criteria is.
You are gonna get docked. You are gonna get fined if you don't start naming the PGA Tour verbiage.
So like, I don't even know exactly, what's going on, but I know that if I play well these last 3 weeks, that I have a possibility or an opportunity to earn my way into the first two elevated events, which I think is AT&T at Pebble and Riv, which would be
Nailed it. Yep.
incredible. So, that's kind of a focus of mine. But I can't think about that while I'm out playing. I can only think about, the shot that I'm hitting off of the first tee in Cabo next week. So, definitely trying to not get ahead of myself and just focus on the task at hand. But Riviera has been a goal. Riviera, playing at Riv would be sweet.
Well, Michael, you got three tournaments at least in 2025 to knock off that goal, a couple others as you start your 2026 campaign as a full-fledged member of the PGA Tour. This was a lot of fun. Certainly appreciate you taking the time. Congrats on your first win of what seems like many. Look forward to seeing you on the PGA Tour full-time in 2026. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
We talked about this last week. That was an amazing interview. And thank you to Michael Brennan for taking the time to sit down and talk with the podcast. It's going to be fun to cover this young man as he continues to learn, continues to improve. He has all the makings of a superstar. What was your takeaway from the interview?
Well, a couple things. And certainly, I enjoyed my chat with him. This is the first time that I spoke with him, even though he's sort of one of these rising stars in the world of golf. He was sort of taken aback by my question about, you know, all of these young players that we've talked about in this podcast, that we talk about on Golf Today, that we talk about on all these other platforms. It's really easy to just lump them into one category, right? Where here's a young guy, here's an explosive guy, here's a fiery guy, here's a fearless guy, here's a guy who hits it really far and is not afraid of making birdies. It's really easy to lump all those players together. A Luke Clanton, a Michael Thorbjornsson, now a Michael Brennan. They are all different. They're all on different timelines. I think it's just really easy to lump them all into one category. Michael Brennan may be, you know, sort of superior in one category, but he's working on another one. I thought the way that he has addressed what were pretty clear weaknesses over the past year, addressed them, winning three times on the PGA Tour Americas on a circuit where you know you're going to have to go low and make birdies, that immediately transferring to the PGA Tour level has to give him so much confidence that A, he has what it takes, and B, he has been working on the right things. And I think that's the most impressive part when you're looking for his career trajectory.
And I do want to circle back around. We had this conversation last week on the podcast just about how the PGA Tour probably deserves a little bit of kudos here because they've created these pathways. It took them a long time to get there through PGA Tour University. You cover it better than anybody else in the business. You have seen how it has grown and evolved. It's important to point out, he was 12th on that list. This is not the number one draft pick. Here is a player that made the most of what he had earned. I don't want to say given, of what he had been earned through this PGA Tour University program. It was status on PGA Tour Americas and give it your best shot. Maybe you can work your way up to the Korn Ferry Tour. And he proved he was so much better than that.
It does make me a little bit curious because Michael Brennan, if you remember in that interview, said that he did not believe that he was going to get into any fall events. And if these fall events are supposed to be sort of the B or C level competition of the PGA Tour, and he, Michael Brennan, a rising star in the world of golf, who has proven it on the other levels, if he cannot get spot starts in the fall, which again, a B or C level PGA Tour event, what does that mean going forward? Because is he going to get sponsor exemptions into full field events on the PGA Tour? Is all of a sudden the Valspar Championship going to be looking at giving him a sponsor exemption? All of a sudden, it's going to be a brand new world in 2026, where you have fewer fully exempt members. All of those starts are really precious. Yeah. Everyone is going to be making sure that those starts are worthwhile. Are there still windows of opportunity for a player of his caliber who just needs access? That is sort of one of the big questions that I have.
And I think one of the arguments is always going to be, if you're good enough, you're going to make it to the PGA Tour.
Eventually. Not necessarily.
However, yes, that was going to be my fallback. If you're a Tiger Woods or a Phil Mickelson or any of these other stars who have come up onto the PGA Tour without going through Q School, you do find a way. The concern now, though, and again, Michael Brennan is the best case. He's the best comp in this particular situation. If the PGA Tour continues to narrow the window, eventually you're going to narrow it to the point where all these stars don't make it through. Some of them aren't going to make it through. It's just a numbers game at this point. It's not as though they're not talented enough. It's not as though they're not good enough. It's just that the numbers don't add up to allow them to get starts on the PGA Tour. That's the other side of the coin. When I give the PGA Tour their kudos, it's because they have created a system so all of the top stars have an opportunity to play their way on. I think that system needs to be made sure that it's flushed out enough that you don't have this narrowing effect that's going to cost you a star down the line.
It is going to be very interesting because every player has a different origin story. Every player has a different journey to get to the PGA Tour. I remember, you know, a decade or so ago, Jordan Spieth flamed out in the second stage of Q School. He had no access anywhere, and he was sort of just relying on sponsor exemptions, nearly won a term. I believe it was in Puerto Rico. All of a sudden, he gets special temporary status, and then he's off and running. Brooks Koepka, similar. I believe it was actually the same Q School year. He doesn't get through there. He ends up going to Europe, gets the developmental circuit that way, improves his world ranking to the point where he can then get PGA Tour status. Everyone is a little bit different, and it makes you wonder what would have happened to Michael Brennan had he not won in Utah. If that was the only start that he's getting in the fall, all of a sudden he's spending an entire year apprenticing on the Korn Ferry Tour, needing to shoot 25 under par to win those golf tournaments. It's no sure thing that Michael Brennan was going to be on the PGA Tour in 2027. Now he doesn't have to worry about it. Now he can set a schedule. Now he could potentially get his way in the signature events. Now he can be among the top 50 and get a Masters invite in 2026, all by having a life-changing week. So having still on the PGA Tour that carrot, that opportunity to change your career trajectory in a demonstrable way, I still think is the biggest appeal of the tour, because they can regenerate stars better than any other circuit on the planet.
And they're doing a good job of that. Again, I can't circle back around enough on this and give the PGA Tour their flowers when it comes to the system they have created. And to your previous point, if Michael Brennan did not win in Utah and get that life-changing event, I truly believe that a year on the Korn Ferry Tour was not going to be the worst thing for him. We've heard it time and time again, how I was up in Connecticut last week co-hosting Golf Today, and we had a lot of players on from the Epson Tour, and they talked about how important it was to spend a year straight out of college learning how to be a professional. You can do it on that level without the spotlight, without the glaring magnifying glass that comes along with being a PGA Tour pro. So I don't know if that's a terrible thing, and I truly believe eventually he would have played his way on, but you're right, it could have held him back for a year, maybe more.
Very interesting. Can't wait to see him. He's playing this week. He's going to be playing the other two fall events as well, as he tries to secure his spot among the top 50 in the official world golf ranking, get into the Masters among other events in 2026. Exciting young player. Certainly appreciate him taking the time. If you've been stuck with us for this long, you can see this like hat line that I have.
Oh, wow. That looks terrible. That is awful.
Well, I wore a hat.
I did
because
not.
It's very sunny here in Florida. You've had cancer spots, Rex, just ravaging your body, hacked out with a chainsaw and an axe. You would think you have learned your lesson by this point, but you didn't. That is why I look like this, because we did play golf today. We did not play particularly good golf. What do you have to say for yourself?
As far as, I hope my dermatologist is not watching this, because she's not the kindest lady. I can tell you right now, she's a bit of an axe murderer, as I've said time and time again. Yes, I have had things, not cancer thing, cut off my face. I believe they call them precancer cells, and I will have to do that again in a few weeks going into next year. I always have to find the off season, because the moneymaker.
Yes,
it takes a hit when it comes to that thing she cuts off. However, I knew we were doing the podcast, and I didn't want whatever that is.
It's certainly not a good look, nor was the look that we had on the golf course, where, I mean, it was a beautiful day.
You know what? You keep saying that. We throw it up there.
Let's
go straight to the highlights.
It's a beautiful day here in Northeast Florida, about 72 degrees. Again, we're here at Hammock Beach. If you guys have ever experienced it, a massive resort here has, I believe, two golf courses here. We played the Ocean Course, which is going to be hosting the Constellation Furyk and Friends in 2026. Longtime host Tim Aquana, no longer. So we had an opportunity to see the golf course, talk to Jim Furyk. He's going to be on the show next week for a wide-ranging interview on a host of topics. But we did play the golf course. You hadn't played this golf course since it was redone. You probably played it 15 or so years ago. Oh, yeah. I've actually never been on property, despite living about an hour from here. Brutally difficult day. I'm not sure what the wind gusts were. Had to have been 30, 35 miles an hour. It's always breezy by the ocean anyway. Today certainly felt like even stronger than that.
Gust to 30 miles an hour. I just looked it up on the weather app and Small Craft Advisory. So you will not be shocked that the golf we're playing is a bit of a survival test, that I think both of us just tried to put Band-Aids on whatever we had just to get the golf course around, because neither one of us brought enough golf balls. And so to the point that someone had to go to the range and pick up some range balls. It's pretty embarrassing, isn't it?
Yes. Not as embarrassing as having the driver yips being played by the driver yips. What now feels like more than a decade. Hitting it off the planet, 33% left.
No, you don't have to. Just right, go straight to the highlights.
33% down the middle. Let's first start with you, Rex. If you're following along on YouTube, if you're going to enjoy this. If not, I would strongly encourage you to go to the Golf Channel page on YouTube, find this video, because it is certainly enjoyable. This was Rex on the par 3 17th, about 140-yard shot, which, again, with the wind, was more like 175.
I was pretty proud of this shot. That was actually a really hard hit 5-iron.
Got to talk to the microphone.
That was a really hard hit 5-iron and catch the back edge of the green. I ended up 2-putting for par on that.
Pretty good.
That was very
pretty good. Followed it up with one of your best swings of the day on 18.
That the driver was not my friend today. As you can see there, that is not a driver. I was scared to death all day long. And 18 was playing downwind.
Yes. Frozen rope.
Just an efficient
about 175 yards.
It did not go very far, but it was far enough.
You love to see it. The only highlight, I guess you could more call this a low light, from yours truly. Again, I have been plagued by the driver yips. If you have any suggestions, any swing coaches who are watching this, any swing coaches who are listening to this, please find me. I need help. things have gone.
But only awry. With the driver. I will bail you out a little bit. Yeah.
Iron play is typically not an issue. Pretty good on and around the greens. I switched to the saw putting grip. After seeing Scotty, after seeing Tommy Fleetwood,
sure,
it felt like a move that I had to make. Have never putted better. However, driver is an issue.
Is this where Michael Collins is narrating?
Yes, this is Michael Collins.
So Michael Collins from ESPN. Funny
caddy, ESPN broadcaster, friend of the program, a longtime friend of ours. He was the third wheel for us, and he is on the mic. You are going to hear him now. Let's lay out.
And there it is on the beach.
Right. We're going to need George Costanza to go get that one out of the blowhole.
Yes, folks, that is the Atlantic Ocean on our right. I didn't just hit this onto the beach.
You hit it in the water. You hit it in the ocean.
I hit it in the water.
Right. We're going to need George Costanza.
75 yards.
Go get that one out of the blowhole.
Now, to be fair, that was dead into the teeth of the wind, a little bit off the left, which is...
No, a little bit off the right. It should have been impossible.
And there it is on the beach.
To go there.
We're going to need George Costanza.
If you're watching this, if you're listening to this, slow it down.
Run
it back. Let's find some solutions. Let's try and get the ball in play a little bit more often, because this is no way to live. Certainly a fun day. We appreciate the folks at the Constellation Furyk and Friends having us out for media day. We had a great time. Again, Jim Furyk will be on the program next week. Wide-ranging interview. A lot of fun with him. Certainly appreciate him taking the time as well. In the meantime, you guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf, aka golfchannel.com, which is up and running. Rex and I will be back next week again for that Furyk interview, as well as anything else that's come up in the world of golf. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Talk to you guys next week.